Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there, I could do this.
Let's take a ride, find your wild side, real stories, see with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears, I was like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoy the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. This is the first time we've done a live podcast in quite a while. So I'm super stoked. Thank you, everybody, that's been listening to the in-studio podcast. As always, you can find this show at Who the Wild Things Are Pod or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just a reminder, we have 3 Wild Ride Wilderness courses that are available. You can get those. Get more information on those. You can click the link in my bio, go to the Wild Ride Outdoors website, or go through the Survival University website and check out all the information related to this year's classes. So, with that said, I'm going to hop on here and invite my friend Sarah.
So, a little bit about Sarah. She is a creator and natural food proponent and a naturalist that is living remotely off-grid and living a really cool lifestyle, practicing a lot of different traditional skills. So that is why I invited her to talk with us today. So I think you guys will really get a kick out of her story and just kind of the joy that she lives with. She's a very uplifting spirit. So I'm very excited to have her on. Cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining. I was just explaining a little bit about what you do to all the folks on here, but I'm very stoked for our conversation, and I've really been following along with your journey for the last couple of years, and yeah, it's been exciting and very inspiring to see the joy that you bring to the traditional skills community.
Thank you. I don't know that I can call myself the traditional skills community. Like, I'm not a survivalist, but there are, you know, since I started living on the land and living without a car and without a job and trying to live in a way that was blends with the wilderness and with the wild and that is harmonious, then I started learning a lot, you know, like how to tan hides and making baskets from plants. I still have not made a fire with a bow drill. I tried, and then I was like, you know, I'd rather invent a new way to do this. So, you know, I'm really about thriving and living a luxurious life in the wild. So I fit in there somewhere, but I probably have a lot of other aspects that I'm trying to create and go for with my life also.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm curious, like, before we get to the wild things, eco farm part of your life, I'd like to just take a step back and kind of think about how you got here, because from what I gather, you had an atypical path, and this wasn't always the way in which you lived. So give us a little bit of like background into how we got to today.
How much background do you want? Because we could start with, like, you know, the whole childhood and being disowned by my family and having a criminal, terrorist, neo-Nazi, white supremacist family, and then going to Africa and having all these earth-shattering, life-changing experiences. We could go all the way back to that, or we could start when I first decided to move off grid. I don't know how much, because seriously, my life, I feel like I've lived about 10 lives in this one. Like, if I died tomorrow, I would have been like, but it was awesome. Like, it was, you know, like, I did everything. But there's still more I wanted to do. But so how far back do you want me to go here?
I will leave that up to you. I think I personally would love to hear all of it, but I'll leave that up to you with how much you're comfortable with sharing.
Well, I'm comfortable sharing everything because I'm a very open person, and I love the
Do it.
journey that I've done. So, if you want to hear the whole story, I'll tell it.
Hear
That's
it.
a Okay. So, well, when I was about 5 years old, I have a memory of, it's a rainy day out and I see all these men in raincoats surrounding my house, and turns out that's the FBI. And they came to arrest my father and put him in prison because he tried to blow up the United Nations building. He was the bodyguard for the leader of the American Nazi Party, and was a huge, like, bully, terrorist, violent criminal, but also an intellectual. And he did have a good side. I mean, everyone does. But so he was put in prison at a young age. So my childhood in Kentucky, I spent a lot of time in the woods, and my childhood was okay. But then he got out of prison, and then it became hell. And so I spent a lot more time in the woods and up in trees and in nature, just to have some place where I felt loved and I felt happy, because I didn't feel any of that at home. Then he decides that the Bible says he can have seven wives. So he moved us to Utah. He got a neighbor woman pregnant while, he was with my mom, moved us to Utah so he could be a polygamist. And we moved into this really fancy house that we got for dirt cheap. There was, we had like six kids at the time, or he did, in a nice neighborhood, but we were really poor. And I was just filled with unbelievable amounts of shame and just really miserable about the whole situation of my dad being a polygamist and trying to hide it from the people there. And, just a lot of violence at home, constantly being beat and everything. But right behind my house was the Rocky Mountains. Huge, beautiful, I mean, just majestic mountains with a year-round creek of cold water running down the mountains. And so I spent a lot of time up there. And, I used to get really excited if I found a sharp rock or something that I thought you could use as a tool or something, and I was reading books like how I could live in the mountains so I could run away. And I was reading like that book, My Side of the Mountain. Probably a lot of people know about that book, and just trying to read about wild plants and stuff, like how can I run away and live in the mountains? And what stopped me was that I didn't know. I used to be sick all the time. I had lots of colds and stuff. And I'm like, how am I going to blow my nose in the wilderness? What am I going to do? And then I was like, and how am I going to get a college education? And so that stopped me. But then, so as high school came around, I started getting a lot of attention for being pretty. And so I really like what the mountains gave me as far as feeling loved and feeling something positive, because my home life was hell. I started getting from people at school. And so I started really leaning on that, like feeling valuable for being pretty. And I started modeling, fashion modeling. And that helped me to get out of my family. So at 15 years old, I got discovered by this Italian modeling agency. And so I ended up going to Italy at 15. And the only reason my parents let me go is they thought I was going to make them rich, And so, and I thought that was the dream, like money and fame and, being pretty. And so I started off in Milan, and then I ended up going to Paris. And I started getting, well, okay. So one of the things was I really didn't want to get sick anymore because I didn't want to have to go back home. And when I was at home, I was chronically sick. So I started just really cleaning up my diet and just eating so good. And I thought, I should feel superhuman now because I'm just eating so good, and I'm, walking and exercising and all this stuff. And I didn't feel all that great. And I was like, why don't I feel all that great? So, I was living in Paris at the time, and my career started to really take off. And I was flying all around the world doing photo shoots, in Asia and in Turkey and in the Caribbean and Canary Islands and all over Europe and working in London and Munich and but based out of Paris, right? So I'm also trying to like find this sense of health so I don't have to go back to my family. And I'm around 16 at the time. And I went to visit an aunt and uncle in Kentucky who owned a health food store, and my aunt had just become a massage therapist. And she gave me a massage, and it just blew my mind because I'd never been hugged by my family. I'd just been beaten constantly. I used to, you know, have to hide all the welts on my body when I go to school. And to have this positive touch, I was just like, oh, this is the most amazing thing ever. And also, her husband, who was a little wacky, turned me on to this book about fruitarianism, about how the only thing man was meant to eat was fruits and nuts and fasting. And I was like, that's got to be the answer. That's why I don't feel superhuman, you know, because I should just be eating fruits and nuts and fasting. So I started fasting, and I did like 3 weeks of fasting on fruit juices. And then I lived for an entire year off of fruits and nuts while I was modeling living in Europe. But I ate a lot of cashews and avocados and, you know, fatty foods. And I actually did okay. I had a lot of blood sugar imbalances because of it. But I did okay. But I was getting thinner. But that actually helped me to work more as a model. So yeah, my career was just going crazy. And I was obsessive about cleaning myself out because I thought that was the answer and that's what I needed. And over time, I started hating modeling, like absolutely hating it. Like it was so empty and people only cared about how you look. And, you know, the money just, and the money was great. It bought me my freedom. But because I got that massage and it blew my mind, I was like, that's all I care about. Like, I just want to feel good. You know, I want to be happy and I want to feel good. And I don't feel that way, you know, in the whole illusion of money and fame. Not that I was famous, but I was on magazines and, you know, stuff. So it wasn't what I thought it was. So I gave it all up and I went to school, to massage school in New Mexico, because I saw this ad that said study massage in enchanting New Mexico and had a picture of a Native American Pueblo. And I was like, wow, cool. So I gave up the modeling and I went to massage school. It was a 6-month course in New Mexico. And while I was there, so just before that happened, I saw an African dance performance. This was before hip hop was a thing, like a mainstream thing. And that's how old I am. So I saw this performance and it blew my mind. I mean, they had live drums and the dancers, the women were just fierce and so powerful and so, like, it was so raw and primal. But at the same time, these women looked like they were seeing God. I mean, just so much joy in their eyes and just so much light. And I was just like, I literally cried when I saw this performance. And I was like, I turned to the lady next to me. I'm like, do you think white people can do this? Which is funny now because, you know, white people do hip hop and all that stuff. But back then, that wasn't the case at all. So I went back to Europe, but this was before I left Europe, and I found some African dance classes and I became obsessed and I started studying it. So then when I went to New Mexico to go to massage school, I found an African dance class there. And that's where I met my son's father, who was a Mexican man who was drumming for an African dance class. And the connection between us was just like fire. It was just absolute fire. And he changed my life. Not only did I have a son, but he was very much in touch with his like indigenous side. Very earthy, very primal, very good with making things with his hands. And, you know, he used to take me on walks through the river and through the mountains. And we spent a lot of time in the hot springs. And so I went from being like this suburban Utah girl, very disconnected from my body, very disconnected from, you know, anything that had to do with just being down to earth, you know. And he taught me how to make things with my hands and how to play drums. And it was a mind mind-blowing experience. I mean, he absolutely rocked my world. So much passion, so much love, so much just earthiness, you know, in the most exciting ways. And it made everything that I had in the modeling world just seem like garbage. Like it was nothing. Like, so here I have this life with this man who was poor and I was poor. And, you know, it was just phenomenal. The nature connection, the passion connection, the music connection, the arts, all of that. And so, and then I had a son with him, which changed my life in so many ways. But, you know, I was a very damaged individual and so was he. And a lot of really negative things played out. And I, you know, when, as I started standing up to him more, then he started going towards other women because he didn't like being challenged. And so I left him. But I was still doing African dance, and I was so obsessed with African dance because the dance moves had so much to do with connecting to everyday life living on the land. You know, the dance moves, either they were like portraying certain animals or, you know, harvesting or picking crops or planting or, and, you know, a lot of just celebrating life. And there was, the more I started studying African culture, I was so fascinated about how the culture, it was just like everything tied in together. Like dance wasn't just a performance thing. It was a way to deal with stress and to raise your energy levels and to celebrate and to bring community together and to express feelings and, you know, all these things that had a really important role in the society. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And so I actually had, at the time in New Mexico, there were no Black people doing African dance. And so I actually had Black people hiring me to perform in front of all Black audiences, African dance. It was just really bizarre. And I'm like, how did I come from this Nazi family and then go to this? It was just wild. But I was really passionate about it. And there was actually a Haitian woman who saw me dancing and hired me to perform at her restaurant, her Caribbean restaurant and all that. So after I left my son's father, I was just diving more and more and more into African dance. And I saved up every penny I had. I was so poor at the time. And I actually went to Africa to an African dance camp that was held on an island just off the coast of Guinea, West Africa. And so when I was on the plane going there, I was like, there were all these very modernized African people on the plane, you know, in their suits and dressed real nice and talking in French and stuff. And I was like, oh no, I wanted to go see an Africa where people were still living, you know, close to the land, where their dances were, you know, reflected their daily life and they got their food from the land and, you know, all that. And, but I wasn't let down because when I went there, you know, I was in the city of Conakry, and then I went to an island. We had to take a little motorized canoe to this island. And I was camping out on the beach with other American students and students from around the world too. And we were, learning African drumming and dancing on this island, dancing on this dirt ground with all these drummers. I mean, the drums are so powerful. I don't know if you've heard much African drumming, but it's just powerful. Just, it just gives you so much life and energy. And so I was just like in this dream being there. And then the guy who held the dance camp, he was from there, but he had been living in Sweden. And he and I mean, it was the same kind of connection I had with my son's father. It was just straight fire, like, whew. So we had this wild, passionate relationship, and I'm on this island, you know, dancing barefoot in the dirt and drumming, and, you know, it was just like heaven. It was heaven on earth, and then it was hell, because I had attracted, you know, all the negative stuff I grew up with my father. I was carrying that with me, and it was, you know, everywhere I would go, I would find that in my relationships, and here it was again. And I went into a really dark place, and then I got malaria, and I almost died. And
whoa,
that, yeah, it was really intense. And his family, well, he saved my life, and so did and his mother, because I got to a place where I was so sick, I couldn't eat anything. Everything I drank, I sweated out of me. I was in a lot of pain. I was just I was losing my, they gave me quinine for the malaria, but the quinine started to kill me because my system was just so completely empty. And so he had to take care of me, you know, he had to bathe me and, like, you know, help me go to the bathroom, everything, because I was just so dead, so gone. And I started to realize I was going to die. And I was like, there's something wrong here because I don't care. Like, I was so tired of how hard my life had been and how much I'd been just, like, trying to keep my head above water. And so I started praying for a reason to want to live, because I, you know, I have a son and I don't care that I'm going to die. Like, that's seriously, something's wrong. But that's how tired I was. I was tired of being heartbroken and, you know, all that stuff. So I started praying, like, just give me, God, just give me a reason to want to live. And right after that, his mother came in the room and she just grabbed my head and she just held it in her lap. And I just felt my body just be flooded with love. Like, I just felt all this love flood through me. And I realized I had never felt that from my own mother. I had never felt that in my entire life from my mother. And it gave me this reason to want to live. And I was like, I want to be able to give that to my son. And as soon as I decided that I wanted to live, then Abdullah, my boyfriend at the time, had come back with some doctors he found, and they gave me an IV injection, and it brought me back to life. And but it was beautiful because I realized when I was dying, I was like, you know, it's easy to die. It's so easy. you just go to sleep. Most people live their whole lives afraid of dying. And I was like, you know, if I'm willing to just let it all go right now, why don't I just go for it? Like, why don't I just freaking live? Mm-hmm. Just balls out, go for everything I ever dreamed of. Because I was just going to let it all go, you know? And so that was a really amazing life-changing experience for me. And then I came back to the States. My boyfriend, Abdullah was his name, the African guy. He was living in Sweden. I went to visit him there. He was going to be teaching African dance in LA. So I decided I was going to come to LA to see him. And then I just realized I wanted to, and I started going to LA and going to all these African dance classes. And then I decided I wanted to try and make it in the film industry to make money so I could buy land and raise my son in nature, because that's all I really cared about. I just wanted to be in nature, but I didn't have the money for it. So things with he and I fell apart. We're still friends to this day, but that all fell apart. But I ended up moving to LA with my son. And then in LA, I started taking a lot of acting classes and dancing classes, and the acting classes were really therapy for me because I was so dead inside in so many ways and emotionally, and the acting helped me to dredge up all these emotions. I started writing a lot. I actually started rapping. One day I was walking down the road and I heard these guys in the cipher freestyle rapping, and I was like, oh, that's so me, you know, because I'd been writing all this poetry. And so I started doing that, and then some people heard me, and they were like, oh, you know, I'm friends with this big time producer. I'm not going to mention names now on here, but I'll take you to him to, you know. And, you know, there was a really shady industry, and I didn't think I was really that good at the time, and so I didn't go for it. But that gave me an outlet for an enormous amount of rage, because before then I was just such a victim, you know. So I had all this, and then I found this therapy. It was like a body mind therapy that helps you to release repressed emotions in your body. Mm. There was a woman doing it, and I had been suffering from so much depression and just, you know, just in a lot of emotional pain, trying to raise a kid by myself while being poor, and then also having these big dreams, you know. So something in me told me that was going to help me. So I started doing this therapy, and I was working as a massage therapist in different spas, and that's where I met this woman. So she started doing this work on me, and it was so unbelievably powerful, because what started happening was she started helping me to tune into my repressed emotions and feel them. Then I started coming down into my body more, and I started to open more, and I started to, like, suddenly, like, I'm connecting and feeling like my sense of rhythm got better. I was just so much more present. My son completely changed because he used to have all these weird behaviors to try and get my attention because I was checked out in so many ways. And suddenly, like, I'm more present, and he just came alive. Like, his eyes just, he turned into this little angel kid because suddenly I was there, you know, and I was able to really give him love. Like, I wasn't just going through the motions of hugging him because I thought I should. So I totally came alive, and I had committed myself to this therapy hardcore for about 5 years. Like, that's, I just lived and breathed it. That's all I did. And then what was really cool.
Is this what they call, like, somatic therapy?
Yeah. There's different forms of it. This particular form is called Rosen Method, and it was so powerful. I actually went to a training for it in New Mexico at Georgie O'Keefe's old ranch. And I remember one day I went in for a session to do a session of the training. And as I was walking in, I look at the mountains, and in my mind, I'm thinking, God, that's so beautiful. In my mind, right? Then I go into the session, and I tapped into some deep repressed emotions, and I cried like a little kid, and just crying. And afterwards, I felt so open, you know, just. And then I walk outside and I look at those same mountains, and I'm not thinking this with my mind. I feel them. I feel that beauty through my whole being. And I'm like, whoa, this is a totally different experience. And so that therapy, I mean, it just changed me night and day. People who knew me before and afterwards, like, whoa, like, you used to seem kind of out of it, you know, and like, you're so different now. I just started getting more and more and more grounded. But it also got me in touch with an enormous amount of rage because I had been beat so much and like emotionally degraded as a female from my father that I had internalized all that. And that was what making me sick, right? So all this rage I had in me is like, I need a place, you know, to get it out. So the rapping at that, you know, was this perfect outlet because I could rage, you know, that was acceptable in that culture at that time. And then I started taking my son to the park to play basketball, and he started teaching me how to dribble. And, you know, I'd never played before. And I was like, oh my God, this is cool. Like, I love this, you know? So I started going to the park when he was in school and like dribbling around and playing and stuff. And then guys started asking me to play against them. And then I started beating them all. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And then I started beating guys who were college basketball players, who were way taller than me, who've been playing their whole lives. I mean, I started beating 95% of the guys I played. And I'm like, what the heck? This is crazy, because I just spent all this time in therapy learning how to feel and have emotions, which you think is a more feminine thing. And now I'm beating these guys. And I realized it's because when you're in touch with your emotions, you are present. When you can't feel, which a lot of men are taught not to feel, they're taught to suppress their emotions. And they're definitely not going to have some fear about losing to a female. There's a lot attached to that. Whereas for me, I didn't care if I lost because, you know, I was used to that. So I'm like, how fascinating that me learning how to feel and me learning how to be present, it made me faster. It made me sharper. Like, I'm in the moment. I'm not thinking. I'm just feeling. I'm just like reacting. Boom, boom, boom. And I'm not afraid of losing. And on top of that, I had this huge drive in me to never be a victim to a man because of how my father was. So it made me just want to push the limits to see what I could do as a female, you know, like what power I had as a female in the world. And so then I actually got recruited to play on a men's basketball team because I was playing at the park. But like, the park was like, so like, talk about being wild and free. You know, I'd be out there, like, a lot of the guys were from the hood that played there, and you know, you could just talk any kind of smack you wanted. It was a place where you just got it all out. There was no pretension. I didn't have to act like a lady. It was just raw. And I would run as hard as I could, just, and I would stay at the park till 10 o'clock at night till they shut the lights off, you know, on the nights that my son was staying over at a friend's or something. I was obsessed. It was so fun. I felt so alive. And And then because I was doing all this dance stuff, I had started taking all these hip hop classes in Hollywood. I wanted to learn how to break dance. And so I went to this place where it was a gym, an open gym where all these break dancers would practice, but there also were a bunch of stunt people practicing there. And I was watching the stunt people like doing all these kicks and like a lot of Taekwondo stuff, like flashy martial arts stuff. And I was like, oh, that looks so fun. And, you know, because of my dance history, you know, the West African dance was just really wild and super athletic and energetic. And so it really appealed to me. So I started hanging out with them and learning, and I got good really fast. And so, but before that, like a lot of those kicks and the jumps, they hurt my body to do. So I would do yoga. So I spent like 3 years from the time I was like 32 up until 34 35 doing yoga all the time to try and release all the tension in my hips, because it felt like just dead weight. Like it was hard to jump. And most people think when you get older, everything gets harder, right? And you're slowing down. But I felt like, no, this is like repressed emotional stuff that's fear and anxiety and stuff that's making my hips so tight and so dead. So in yoga class, I was applying a lot of what I learned in the body mind therapy to move through all kinds of anxiety and emotional stuff. And so my body started opening up more and more and more. So doing those kicks and those jumps started being easier and easier and easier. So by the time I'm 35, I got my first job as a stunt woman playing a ninja in this little small film. And so, So then, yes, I became a stunt woman. Like I was working on TV shows and in films and everything, doing the martial arts and fighting. And for me, that was a place to put all this rage that I had, you know, all this anger inside. It was doing these fight scenes because I knew no one was going to get hurt. It was just play. It was fun. It was promoting violence, which at this point in my life, I don't do now. But at the time, it was better than actually going out and hurting people because I had the rage, or holding it in and letting myself be hurt. So I've got this career now. I'm in Hollywood, and I'm working as a massage therapist, and I'm killing it doing that. But I'm also working as a stunt woman. And then I got invited to train with this group called 8711, which were the guys who did like The Matrix and Bourne Identity and 300. I mean, these are like the, you know, baddest stuntman fighter types in the industry. And I got invited to train with them. And through that, and then I started making my own films too, because there was a lot of power tripping in the industry and a lot of producers expecting you to sleep with them and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, gross. I'm just going to make my own films. And so then I got a job doubling an actress in Serbia and working on a film in Serbia. So I went there to do that, and then I met this Bulgarian stuntman, and we felt it was like madly in love, crazy fire again. He was actually the stunt double for Conan. I don't know if you saw the movie Conan with Jason Momoa. Anyway, I was there when they were filming all that.
They like push a big,
I never watched,
big wheel.
Okay. I don't know. I never watched it. I wasn't like a big fan of his. But so there was all this fire between us. And then he came to visit me in LA, and then he got scared and he just completely shut down and didn't want the relationship. And I was like, you know, devastated. But at the same time, I had a massage client who was an actress, and she was like, you know, I worked on a film in Bulgaria. They've got an American studio there shooting stuff. You should send them your material, because I'd been making my own short films. So I sent them a short film that I made. And the very next day they emailed me and said, do you want to star in an action film? And I'm just like, whoa. And everything just kind of fell together for me to go to Bulgaria. And this was cool because I starred in this action film when I was 40. It was my first ever starring role in anything, and I'm 40 years old. And I did my first standing back tuck when I was 39. And so I was seeing my life just getting easier and easier. And there's a reason I'm telling you all this stuff that's not really about the farm thing. It's leading up to why I'm able to do what I'm doing now. So hopefully you're cool with that. So
yeah, I like hearing the background.
Okay. So I go to Bulgaria, and the guy won't talk to me and doesn't want anything to do with me. And that was devastating, but I was like, well, I'm here to do this film anyway. So I got to star in this film. I got to choreograph some of the fights myself. I did all my own stunts and all of the fights. It was a horrible, horrible film, but I got to do some really cool action. And, you know, that was awesome. But it was all very creepy. Like, the producer was trying to get me to sleep with him, and, you know, just all that gross stuff. I thought they were going to take me serious because the film that I sent them, you know, I wrote it, I directed it, I starred in it, I rapped my own music in it, you know, like, I choreographed the fights, I did everything. I thought they were going to take me serious. No. And so I stayed there for a year, working on a bunch of different films. And during that time, you know, and I was totally heartbroken. I spent the whole year just crying all the time. But this girl took me to a village that she grew up in Bulgaria. And Bulgaria was only just, at the time I was there, it was communist just 20 years prior. So the walls just kind of came down, and so they were more open to other things in the world. And so there was a lot of old school ways of being. Like, most of the people that live in the city had family in a village where they grew food and, you know, were all very much connected to the land. And the land there was gorgeous. It was so beautiful, but the mentality was horrific. And the communist buildings were like putting a knife in your chest. They were so depressing and so ugly. But then you'd be like walking down the streets in this one city and there's cherry trees everywhere and it's like absolute paradise. But the buildings themselves were just like hideous. And it was very kind of depressing place, actually, but the land was incredible. So when I saw this village that this girl took me to a village that she grew up in, and it blew my mind because, you know, when I was living in Hollywood, I was trying to eat the cleanest, best, most, you know, high nutrition food possible. It was just very, very, very expensive because I was training to be this athlete, you know, I wanted to be superhuman and I wanted to put the best things in my body possible. And yeah, super expensive. And then here I am in this village where they grow their own food and there's fruit dripping off the trees everywhere. And people are bringing me honey from their bees and juice from their grapes and cheese from their sheep's milk that they milked and everything. And I was just like, oh. And because I had had my heart broken so much and it was just really like the industry, why I went there, you know, wanting this fame and fortune and money and being in the industry, I was so like, ew, it's just gross. And then having my heart broken, I was like, I don't want to get bitter. I love the love that I felt, you know, it felt so pure and so beautiful. And I'm like, I want to stay in that state. So when I was in her village and I'm in all this nature, I'm like, this is the feeling. This is the feeling. It's like pure, it's like soft, it's like loving, it's like so beautiful, you know, the feeling of being in nature. And I'm, this is what I want. And all this healthy food, it's everywhere, you know? And so I decided that, you know, that's what I wanted. So while I was still in Bulgaria, I started working on projects to try and bring, turn trashy, empty lots into like urban gardens and stuff. And then I got hired to work on a film that they hired me as the stunt coordinator, and that caused this huge uproar because only the men, it was very like the whole man woman thing there was very different than the United States, as far as, you know, men were super macho, and the there was only one stunt coordinator there that he controlled everything, and he didn't allow other stunt groups to even get into the films that came through there. And then so when the production company hired me to be in charge of all these guys who don't, you know, not used to that, it was kind of a big deal. But I ended up doing it. I was the stunt coordinator, I was the fight choreographer, I was the actress and the stunt woman. and I was in charge of all these guys, and it was like, it was exciting, you know, it was a big deal, but through this whole process of me trying to find my power so I wouldn't be a victim to someone like my father, you know, learning to play against men and learning to fight against men, and then being in charge of all these guys, I started to see the limitations of like physical male power. So, you know, like I'm training with these guys who they were called the alpha stunt team. Like they were the alpha males, and they were very physically just masculine, you know, and just, I mean, like the Spartacus, these are those guys. I mean, they were just, ooh. But they didn't have the power to stand up to the production company who was taking advantage of them, or they didn't have power to change things in their society that were really negative. So they really had this victim mentality. And we would, after training, we'd go to lunch and we'd hang out. And I just felt like there was a lack of intelligence going on. It was all about being tough, being the strongest, which was the rap world also, you know, this fighting and being tough and being the strongest, being the baddest. And I'm just thinking, if you can't create an incredible life, you really don't have power. You know, you may be physically, muscularly stronger than certain people, but I stood up to the production company for them because they were taking advantage of them because they're Bulgarians. And I fought for these guys so they'd get paid more. Every time they had to hit the ground, they're supposed to get paid more. But they didn't appreciate that because it made them look bad or feel bad that they never stood up for themselves. And I thought I was helping, but, you know, I learned my lesson from that. So I was getting jaded from this whole world of, like, you know, power. Like, I'm like, this is not the power. I don't want to spend my time fighting, thinking that my life's going to get better when I'm fighting. I want beauty. I want love. I want grace and ease and flow and creativity and fun. And I want life to feel good, you know? And I finally got it that I don't need to fight against men who were making my life hard, or I thought they were, in order for my life to feel good. I walk away from that and I go create my own world. So instead of like when I'd be at these lunches after our training with the stunt guys and just listening to the, I mean, just crazy disrespectful stuff they would say about women. And just, you know, I hate to say it, but really idiotic stuff. And I'm like, I don't need to try and get these guys on the same page as me. I don't need to get them to try and see my way. I don't need to even fight with them to try to get them to respect women. I just need to walk away and respect myself, you know? And then after I decided I didn't care about any of that world anymore, and all I wanted to do was live in nature and grow food, then I lost all the money I made there. So I won't go into that whole story, but all the money I made in the films, my car, I had a brand new Prius in LA that I rented to a friend while I was gone for the year. And it actually got repoed because he didn't make the payments. So I lost all my money. I lost my car. I came back to LA and I was like, I just don't care about all the things I thought I cared about before. You know, like I had been cracked open to feeling, to being much more even more sensitive than before. And that's all I cared about. So I decided, I went back with nothing, and I was staying with some friends in their apartment in Hollywood, and I started learning how to grow food like on the balcony. And then I witnessed a raid on a raw food co-op, and I went and filmed it, and I interviewed people, and I started finding out all this crazy stuff about our food industry and things I didn't know. You know, about the factory farmed meat and stuff with the milk, the dairy industry and the bovine growth hormone and Monsanto and all this serious toxicity with our food system. And I was, you know, my eyes were open. And I was like, oh my God, like I can't rely on the system, like the amount of control that was going into our food system. So I started really having this desire to grow my own food. And then I got invited to move to a house in Pasadena where I could help them transform it into an urban farm. So I did a ton of work on that to transform their place into an urban farm. And then I wanted to expand more. I wanted chickens and goats. And so then I just started moving out into the countryside. At this time, I still don't have a car, right? And I move out into the country to stay on a ranch. And I was hoping to learn how to grow food out in the kind of desert where it was cheaper to get land. And I was hoping to work towards getting this land that I had seen in a town nearby. And so on this ranch I was staying on, you know, and I'm riding my bike to get to a bus stop, to get to town, to get food and stuff. And I'm just living off of faith because I didn't have any money, but occasionally I'd get residual checks from the stunt work I was doing, and I didn't have a car. And so I dug this guy's place up by hand with a pickaxe, like in like a whole acre that I dug up, and I put mulch and horse manure and all this stuff that I got from neighbors and planted everything. I terraced hills. I did so much work there. I planted so much. And within days, the rabbits ate it all. And I was just like, oh my God. I had no idea that, you know, growing a garden in the city is totally different from growing it with wildlife. And it got me to start thinking a lot about how the heck do you do this? And it's not in my mentality to fight against the wildlife. I feel like they deserve to be here, but why is this so out of balance? You know, like, why is this so hard? I started asking all these questions. And, you know, part of what I saw was that, you know, people there kill all the predators. You know, they're protecting their dogs and their cats. And so they kill all the predators. They kill the rattlesnakes. They kill the coyotes. They kill anything that's going to keep the balance of nature. It's going to keep the rabbits, you know, from overpopulating, and the rats and the squirrels and all that stuff. So I saw that. And, you know, so I'm living off faith, being at this ranch, and suddenly I don't have money. Like, I'm not getting residual checks. I was trying to sell all my film equipment from when I was making films, and no one was buying it. And suddenly I don't have the money for rent. And I'm like, oh my God, like, my faith is not working. Like, and I went to a really dark place, a really dark place. And then I started to remember, like, spiritual teachings I had heard, some from Jesus, some from other teachings about just believe, 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 you know, have faith, believe, focus on what you want. Don't, it's not like the whole thing of, you know, life just sucks and it's just that way. Like, there's no spiritual teachings telling you, well, maybe there are some, but not the ones I subscribe to. They're all about, you know, believing and creating your dreams through your faith. And so I sat down and I thought, if I could have absolutely anything right now, what do I want? And what I wanted was to get a room for rent in exchange for work on this ranch in this town that was way over the mountain range from me, which was close to this land that I wanted to work towards buying. And so I was focused on that, but I'm like, you know, how is that going to happen? Because, you know, I have no money. I don't even have a way to get over there. I have a bicycle. And I looked on the map. There was a dirt road down the road from me. And I look on the map and I can see that dirt road, and it looks like it goes over that mountain range to this town. And I'm like, And I just had a really strong desire to go. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there. I have no money. I have nothing, but I feel the strong desire to go. So the next day I get on my bicycle and I have a little bottle of water. It's the hottest time of year. Like, the hottest time of year. And all I bring is one bottle of water, which is dumb, but I was in this flow of energy of just feeling it. And so I get on this bike, I'm riding through the mountains. It's like this dirt road going through these mountains. And I came across this tree, huge, lush green tree covered in cherries, like millions of cherries. And I'm like, how is this possible? My jaw was on the floor. I'm like, I'm in the mountains. There's nothing here. It's the hottest time of year. There's no irrigation. How does this tree have these cherries? And I so wanted to try them, but, you know, I didn't know if they're poisonous or not. I'm like, that would just be really dumb, you know? So I took a picture and I kept writing. And while I was writing, I was like, I'm going to believe that I have everything that I want. I'm just going to believe it. I'm going to feel it in my body, you know, like just feel that I already have it. So with every pedal of the bicycle, I'm just feeling this, that everything that I said I wanted, I had. And I'm cruising through these mountains and I finally come out the other side and now I'm out of water. And I still got this really long hill to go up and then go back down to get to this town. And all along the road, I met people who filled up my water bottle for me. And then I saw some more of those trees too with the cherries on it. And so eventually I ride my bike down into this little town. It's a little town. And the first person I meet is sitting outside of this little gift shop having a yard sale. And I start talking to her. And she offers me a room for rent in exchange for work on her horse ranch. And it's right next to the land that I wanted to eventually buy. And she's like, but I need a $250 deposit. And I was like, okay. I had no money, but I was just like, okay. And she's like, I'll give you a ride home. She put my bike in the back of her truck, gave me a ride home. As soon as I got back to the ranch, a guy who had moved into another room there says, hey, I have a truck. I can help you move. And I started getting phone calls, people wanting to buy my film equipment. So I sold my film equipment. I got my money. The guy gave me a ride to this ranch. Now here I am. I moved into this ranch. And then as soon as I got to that ranch, there's a guy living in the back house and he heard my story and how I rode my bike over there and stuff. And he's like, you know, my ex-girlfriend's like really into this stuff. You should meet her. He brings her over. She hears my story and she's like, you know, I have a truck that I never use. You should just drive it. So she started loaning me her truck. And that was the only way I was able to do anything because I was so far from town there. And so living on that ranch, I started learning, you know, all kinds of things about, I had a little corral where I started growing food and learning how to compost. And I used to, so I cleaned the horse stalls. That was my job. And I was throwing away tons of horse manure. And I was like, this kind of feels dumb. Like this stuff is so valuable. Like I could compost it. So I learned that I could hot compost it. Like in just a month, month and a half, I could turn that horse manure into compost, into really good growing soil. So I started doing that and then I started selling it and I was always sold out. And I started learning how to grow stuff. And then, you know, the woman who owned the place, I started getting into power trips with her. She kind of wanted me to be her little slave. And I felt like I was reliving my childhood with my mom in certain ways. And I was like, oh, I really want to move on. I want my own place. And I want to be able to like grow food and build and, you know, do all these things I'd been learning about that were like permaculture or sustainable living things, off-grid living things. And right after I decided that, this guy shows up at my door that I had done a little construction work for because he had seen me. Actually, when I lived at that ranch, it was the first time I learned how to use power tools from some of the workers there, because the previous ranch I lived at, the owner would not let me use power tools because he was afraid that I would hurt myself and sue him. So I had learned how to use power tools. I actually had a local guy hire me to do some construction stuff with him. He shows up and he's like, so, you know, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm just thinking about how I want to move. And he's like, well, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I just want a place where I can just do what I want to do, you know? And I wanted to have a good road access and I wanted to be able to have my compost business and certain things that I wanted. And he's like, well, you know, I know this place. It's really creepy. Like, I wouldn't want to be down there alone, but, you know, the guy who owns it, he can't move down there. He bought it, but every time he tries to move stuff down there, it gets vandalized. There's a lot of like drug activity going on down there and all this stuff. And he's like, he needs like a security guard and, you know, he'd probably exchange you rent for that. And I was like, you know, let's go see it. So he takes me to this place and it's like this huge isolated canyon that has a train going through it. So there's like a train tunnel, and on one side is a big wash where the river flows when there is water, and the other side was just stark desert. And then up on the hill was this old house that had been painted with graffiti and vandalized and everything. And it was just a really, really creepy place. But I was like, I see potential here. And what I saw was A, freedom, like I could do whatever I wanted. B, I felt resonance with the creepy place because I, you know, a part of me felt like this abandoned, neglected, abused child. And that's what that land looked like. And I felt like maybe I could transform it and myself, you know. So he takes me to meet the guy. And I just don't like this guy. I'm just like, ugh. Night and day, like, mentality. And he just creeped me out. And stuff he said, I just thought was ridiculous. And I was like, you know what? I don't think it's a good match. And then he practically begged me. He's like, you know, no, I think I could learn from you. And you can do whatever you want here. And, you know. So then I was like, okay. So now I've got this. It was a couple of acres that he was said I could use across from the railroad tracks. That's just completely isolated, empty. No one's, there's no electricity, there's no sewage, there's no power. I mean, I already said that. There's nothing there. There's not even water. So his plan was he was going to bring in a water tank and start pumping, getting water delivered because he hadn't dealt with the well situation there. And then I was going to get water from him. And so I needed a place to live there, and I found a shipping container. It was a 40-footer that was cut in half that this guy was willing to sell me for $500. And I'm like, cool, will you deliver it too? And he's like, okay. So he's supposed to deliver this shipping container to me on this property. And the day before, I realized I don't have anything for him to even put this shipping container on. You know, like I need railroad ties. And it was so funny because that day I was thinking, God, I haven't been to the gym in so long. Like, I feel like I need to do squats. Like, I really need my squats. And I need railroad ties. And I didn't have time. And I don't know if I had the truck at the time to go do that. But I didn't have a way to go get them. So I went bushwhacking through this property. There's a bunch of, you know, just dry shrubs and stuff. And guess what I came across? Two huge railroad ties, like the old school ones that are like, you know, over a foot wide. I mean, they're huge, like they don't sell them that big anymore. And the way I moved those, it was like 200 feet or something I had to move them, is I squatted down, I picked up one end and walked it over, and then I squatted down and picked up the other end and walked it over. And so I got my squats and I got my railroad ties, and I moved them myself into place. And the next day he brought the shipping container and put it there. And I started camping out in this thing. I couldn't go back to the farm because I didn't have a car all the time. I didn't have the truck, and you know, I had it occasionally to use. So here I am out in this isolated canyon by myself, camping out in this half cut open shipping container. And whew, that was a wild experience. It was a wild experience. I mean, all the stuff that happened there, it was like my initiation. First off, you know, like I didn't even know how to build stuff except for chicken coops that I had built at the previous ranch I was at. So I was just like going online trying to like figure out how I can turn the shipping container into a house. And so I'm camping out and it's cut open. I've got the owner of the property telling me my face is going to get eaten off by coyotes. And, you know, he walked around with a gun all the time. He was scared of everything there. And then I'm dealing with the crackheads that would come down there at night. Like every single night, there were people that would come down there to do drugs. And he set up a gate. And I was a security guard, so I had to deal with these people. And he set up a gate to keep people out, but they were always parking directly across from my little container. And just all the memories coming back. I'm like, it was so much. So a lot of what was happening, like I was learning how to build stuff. I was learning how to grow stuff. I started setting up the horse manure compost. I started moving, mixing the compost I made from horse manure with the sand of the desert there. And I started growing gardens and fruit trees. I did a ton of rock work. There's rocks everywhere because it was like a riverbed. And I moved all these rocks and I built like water flood prevention, like zones and, you know, around my little container. And I built like a water harvesting pond. So when the river flooded, it wouldn't flood me out. And I started building stuff to make it beautiful. And the more I started making it beautiful there, the more I felt the energy change there. And like the people that were coming down there, like that got a little easier. But I mean, it was funny. There were the guy who owned the property gave me a baby chicken that was abandoned. And so I'm sleeping in this container, me and a baby chicken. And there would be people coming down there at night that didn't know I was in this container because there were zero lights. It was pitch black. And they had, were used to coming down there and there was nothing there. So when they came down at night, they couldn't see me, but I could see them because of their lights of the car. And so it's just me and this little baby chicken in there. And I'd shine my lights out and then I'd hear them like, oh, fuck, you know, and they're all like running to their car and jump in the car and running away. And I mean, there were people who wrecked their cars and rolled them down the hill there. There were guys that came out there and started fires because of fireworks that I had to go put out. There were landslides. There was so much that went on. And then I had my rattlesnake initiation where I had, so I had zero experience with rattlesnakes, zero. And I was always terrified of snakes growing up. And so the first time I see a rattlesnake, it ate a baby chicken of mine. And the owner came with his little snake grabber and moved it. But I literally shook the whole night after that from fear. Like I mean, every bad thing I'd ever heard about rattlesnakes was like in my head. And I was just like, but I was committed to not fighting against them. I was committed to observing them because I feel like, well, they belong here. You know, I have this belief that nature is very genius, that it was created perfectly. And that if it seems imperfect, it's not because I need to control it or dominate it or change it. It's because I need to learn something about it. So I started, you know, just trying to be chill and just observe the rattlesnakes and, you know, not fight against them. And one day I was standing in flip-flops next to this little shaded garden area I had. And I turned around and I walked 2 feet away. And then I turned back around and there's a freaking rattlesnake coiled up like inches away from where my feet were. And I was just like, oh. And I thought it must be dead. Why didn't it strike me? You know, everything I knew about rattlesnakes was what people have told me. And so I rolled a rock to see if it was dead. And it just kind of moseyed on away. And that shook me. And in two ways, it shook me because it didn't strike me, which made me feel like, you know, maybe I am protected. Maybe, you know, I should just keep having faith like this. And also just that maybe what I've been told about rattlesnakes isn't necessarily true. Like they're not just these vicious animals. So that gave me a lot of confidence. And then I just started seeing them everywhere. I was literally surrounded by rattlesnakes. I'd be out digging and I'd come up out of the hole that I was digging and there's a rattlesnake right there that had been sitting there the whole time. You know, or I would be digging a hole and there was all these pots behind the hole. And, you know, after I'd been digging for a while, then I noticed, oh, there's a rattlesnake sleeping right behind those pots. Not rattling at me, not causing any problems. I had free range chickens that liked to be under my shipping container house during the day because it was hot. And a rattlesnake did too. There was a big rattlesnake that lived under there with them. Didn't bother them. They didn't bother it. And then I had one living on my porch and I walked past it, like, you know, it was behind a pot, but it would sleep there every night because that's where the mice would come to get water at night. And so we coexisted. I named her Georgina, and you know, at night she would move from underneath the shipping container over to the chicken coop. This was after she had been just sleeping in this one place. Then she started moving over to the chicken coop once nighttime came, so she could get the mice that would come for the chicken food. And you know, I was out grilling outside, and here comes this huge rattlesnake out from my house, coming straight towards me. And I wasn't afraid because I knew what she was doing. Like, she was going to the chicken coop. She wasn't trying to attack me, you know, so she went to the chicken coop. So I had so many rattlesnake encounters that just proved to me over and over and over, like, these snakes just want to eat mice and rats. They're not trying to attack me. They're not trying to hurt me, you know. And so I really learned to chill out about that. I started learning how to build my place. My place started becoming like this little paradise. And then I met a girl who was at the lumber store that I used to go to buy supplies. And she's like, "What are you doing?" You know? And I told her, and she's like, "Oh, I always wanted to do that." And so we became friends, and she tried to rent some land from this guy also. And he wanted way too much money. He was providing nothing. So she came and lived on my land in a camper, and we got goats together. And then I met a guy who was one of the graffiti artists from, like, back through the train tunnel. There was like this graffiti land that was actually, it was just gorgeous. Like, all the graffiti was beautiful all over in the woods underneath these train tunnels. And eventually I actually met one of the graffiti artists who was a little younger than me, but you know, he wasn't like a 20-year-old. And we started having a relationship. And so it was me and him. He eventually moved down there, and my friend. And by this time, this place is just beautiful. But we went through a lot of stuff. There were fires that came through there. And I had goats. I got goats with my friend. And we let them free range all day, and then we'd lock them up at night. And then the fires came through. We had fires come down from both sides of the canyon, and we had to evacuate. So I had to set my goats free because I couldn't take them out. And, you know, I feel like all the things that happened there were like, I had windstorms. Before I had put up a wall on my container and turned it into a house, you know, it was just open. There were windstorms that were so insane. It would blow the sand. Like, if you walked outside, you'd just get sand blasted. And by the grace of God, the wind was coming from the opposite direction of where the opening was. If it was coming the other way, there's no way I could have lived there. You know, just, I would have just been filled with sand, and it would just been hell. So every time, like, there was all crazy stuff like that happening, you know, all the people coming down and the windstorms and the fires, I just kept trying to let go, just dealing with it. Not, you know, my whole past as being this fighter was learning to be tough and strong and fight against things, but really, you're going to fight the wind? You know, I don't want to fight the rattlesnakes. I'm not going to fight the fires. So I started finding a different kind of power, which was trust, which was surrender, which was letting go. And every time I did that, like, everything just started getting better and better and better in my life. And I really feel like all the craziness that happened there happened because I had so much fear inside of me. And it was just like a mirror. And as I was letting go of my fears and just living in more trust, trusting the rattlesnakes, trusting the wind, trusting, you know, the fires. So with the fires, we had to evacuate. I had to set my goats free because I couldn't take them out. And when we come back days later, I didn't know what to expect because they'd always been locked up at night. They were just hanging out by my house, totally talking. I was like, wow. And it just gave me this kind of trust, like, that we had a cool relationship, you know? And so now I've got, like, you know, I've got this boyfriend and this friend, and we're, you know, the place is beautiful. It doesn't feel like this scary abandoned place anymore. And then the guy who owns the property decides that he wants more money for it, and he did all these shady things to get it. And I was like, you know, you told me I could do whatever I wanted with this property, and you provided nothing, you know, and I put my life on the line. I was out there sleeping, you know, in this container by myself with all kinds of shady characters coming down there, having to deal with them. Yeah, no, I'm not going to pay more money. So, and I was so angry. I was so angry, you know, like very, very, very angry. And a guy, I was talking about it on my Facebook at the time, and a guy said, you know, he's your teacher. And I thought about it, and, you know, I totally do believe that things are put in your life for a reason, and that maybe he was mirroring something back to me, and that I needed to somehow love this man instead of hate him. And I'm like, but how can I love this person? And then I realized the only way I could love him is if I didn't feel like a victim. Like if I felt like I could just move on to something better, then boom, easy. You know, I don't need to hate this man. I don't need to be totally consumed with hate. And so I started really working on thinking that way and believing that way. My friend and I found this place where I'm living now online. And I was like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. Cause I had written down everything that I wanted. You know, I wanted oak trees for the acorns because of the food value. And I wanted rocks and water and, you know, just resources I could build with and use from the land and stuff. And I wanted it to have more of a private feel and more of a nurturing feel. Cause the place I was at was just stark. But while I was at that place, I had done a ton of research about that tree that I had seen with the cherries. And I found out that it was a staple. The seeds inside those wild cherries are a staple food that Native Americans used. And I was just like, oh. And so at the time when I was trying to grow food on his property, I'm like, farming is like slavery. Like it's hard work. It's a lot of work and just having to fight against the wildlife and all the caging and all the fencing. And I'm like, I'm not feeling this, but I need to be able to grow my own food because I don't believe in our food system anymore. So then I started looking into more how the Native Americans did things. And so when I found out about those trees, it was like a revelation because those seeds are like 32% protein. It's like a staple food that grows on trees in the desert without irrigation. And I'm like, this is a revelation. Like, this is huge. This is so huge. This is going to help me to live off the land, you know, without needing all the machines and all the irrigation and the plastic pipes and, you know, all the work. So I had been getting more and more and more into that mentality and learning about that. And so then when I wrote down everything that I wanted in land, you know, the oak trees were one of them because I knew you could eat the acorns. And so we were looking online and we found this property and I was like, oh, but it's way too far away. Like it's so far from LA. I still had an occasional massage client that I worked on and I really didn't have much. Oh, I didn't tell you this though. After I built my place, this guy saw the owner of the property needed to build a deck on his place and all the guys he hired kept flaking on him. So I was like, well, I mean, I could try, you know, you don't have to pay me that much because I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'll try. And so he hired me and I killed it. Like I killed it. Like I built this 35-foot by 8-foot deck with railings and a roof and doors and stairs. Well, no, I didn't build the stairs yet. This guy who was a construction worker, a builder, saw what I built at his place and hired me. And he built really artistic, like decks and beautiful redwood stuff in LA. And so he hired me to work for him. So I learned how to build stairs from him and decks and, you know, even more than what I did for this guy. And just how to build really high-end work and stuff. And he actually gave me a raise when I was working for him. And so I worked for him for a few years. And then, you know, I told him, I got to the point where I was like, I'll only work 3 days a week because this is like slavery. You know, like I love physical work, but only when it feels good. Once it gets to the point that you have to start drinking, which, you know, I don't drink, but that's what all the guys would do. No. It's not fun anymore. And I want to make myself happy, you know? So if you want me to work for you, I'll work for you 3 days a week. But if you're not, you know, whatever. So I ended up kind of moving on from that, but I because I learned how to build the stairs and stuff, the owner of the property, so I found this property that I'm living on now, right, online, didn't have the money to move here. That's I found this property after I decided that I was not going to hate the owner of the property, right? And get just got out of that vibe of hatred and just started believing I could do better. So then I found this place and then or with my friend and I was like, I don't know how the heck we're gonna buy it. We came to see it and it's 20 acres, super cheap, but there's no, I mean, it's really remote. There's nothing here, but there was a well. And so I told the realtor, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll happen. And we went back and my friend told her mother, who had been seeing everything that I had built and created at this off-grid place, and she offered to carry the loan for the land. And at the same time, the guy who was formerly my enemy, who owned the property, gave me $2,000 worth of work to build a chicken coop for him. And he also hired me to build some stairs for him. And then he loaned me $2,000 so I could move. So everything just like fell into place beautifully. And so my friend, you know, my boyfriend, he was an artist. He was, you know, don't want to say bad things about people, but he just, like me and my friend, we were kind of like the guys. Like we handled all the business. We built everything. We did everything. Mainly it was me. You know, my friend, when we moved here, she actually, I'm in my, this is a shipping container studio. She actually researched how to do electrical solar power. So she set up all, she did all the wiring and everything herself just from learning it online. And my house has no power. And I love it that way, actually. But yeah, my boyfriend was not really a help. He did some things. But he was more of an artist, and yeah. Anyway, so we moved here, and basically, things with my friend. Well, so my boyfriend and my friend, we parted ways. I won't go into the whole story of that. And I ended up being here alone in winter. The coldest time of year with suddenly because I my boyfriend I was using his truck to go to work at a horse ranch nearby. That was the job I had and it paid, you know, the mortgage and stuff. And so when I split up with him, I didn't have a truck anymore. And then my friend things that was a whole nother story happened with her. So they're both gone. So suddenly I'm here totally alone, you know, an hour from the nearest city. No job, no money. And I'm like, I need food. I need money. And that same day, the neighbor down the road messaged me and said, I can you help me with my dogs? I need someone to come feed them like 3 days a week and I'll pay you to do that, whatever. And what she, so I could walk to her place and what she paid me paid my mortgage and a little extra. And then I walk outside and I find this huge mushroom patch, like edible mushrooms everywhere. And I'm like, oh, I have food. And so I've been here on this property for somewhere around 6 years now. I'd have to really sit down and think about it to know the exact time. But I've been alone for probably four and a half, five. And in this time of being alone, I've been cultivating my faith because I've watched all these things happen for me, like when I just believed, like just line up so perfectly. And I've been deprogramming myself from society, which teaches you everything you need is outside of you. And what I'm finding is everything I need, I create by believing I have it. Which may sound really out there, but I've watched it work over and over and over. And so being here alone, I have manifested food. I had people just randomly showing up left and right, just bringing me stuff. I wasn't asking for any of it. I've had a few times where I didn't have food for days, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm fasting, you know? And that's easy, and that's great. But if you don't know when you're going to have food again, or where the money's going to come from for it, or whatever, then it was easy for me to go into kind of my childhood program of, you know, feeling abandoned and, you know, go into this negative state. And I started noticing how I could, you know, be like, oh my, I'm hungry and it's cold and I don't have food. And then I'd catch myself going into this negative state. And then I'd look around and be like, oh my God, look where I live. Like, it's ecstasy. It's so beautiful. It's like, I'm the luckiest woman in the world that I get to be here in this quiet, in this beauty, in this, you know, just wild, magical place. And then instantly I go from, you know, feeling like garbage to feeling like $1 million just from, you know, my state of mind. And then I started playing with the idea, if what if when I feel my body feels hungry, what if I tell myself that I already have food and I believe that I have food? What if I can convince myself that I'm fed even when I'm not and I'm hungry? So I tried it. And so I go from feeling hungry and deprived to suddenly feeling not hungry at all because I changed my state of mind. And then within like a really short amount of time, like less than an hour, someone just randomly shows up and is like, hey, I got this huge bag of nuts. Do you want them? That was like gold. And so I'm watching this stuff happen and I'm like, this is incredible. If I could just live here. So I don't have a car. I don't have a job. If I could live in this beautiful freaking paradise and manifest everything I need because I believe I have it, what a dream. And maybe that's why, because I'm always asking myself, why is it so hard for humans to live on the land? All the animals can do it just fine. They get everything they need from right there. They don't need people working jobs they hate in factories to have the things they need. They don't need to drive to jobs. They don't like need to create all this trash and garbage, you know, like everything they need is right there. I want to live that way. Why can't I live that way? And so I've had so many experiences here just show me over and over and over that whatever I believed my reality to be is what it became. Like my boyfriend that lived here, he had a hard time. He used to watch a lot of horror films, and his mind was in this negative place often, very often. You know, like there's monsters behind every tree or something, you know? And for me, I'm like, you know, it's like rainbows and butterflies. And most people would think that I'm naive because I'm here without a gun, by myself, without fences, without a dog. And they would see that as dumb and naive. But I know, because I don't fear it, it's not a problem. And it never has been. Where I know people who have guns and dogs get robbed, you know, up here and have all these issues. I don't have any of those because I don't put my energy there. I don't feed that. So I've been building everything from the ground up here with my own two hands. I've built earth ovens. I've done tons of stonework with stairs, and I'm inventing new ways to do things from the land. That's a lot of what keeps me excited and, you know, entertained, I guess, is just finding new ways to do things that are harmonious with nature. And, but mainly what I'm finding is like creating beauty. Like whenever I create something, if I make it beautiful to me, that every time I see it, I'm like, I feel amazing. And so what I'm finding about is, and that's what I really want to share with people that want to live closer to nature or live in nature or be wild again, is that it's not just about, you know, specific skills. Those skills are important, but it's about your mindset, which, you know, a lot of people say and know, but I'm taking this to a whole new level of mindset. It's not just about being positive. It's about believing in your own power to create the things you need because you believe in them. And so I've been having, you know, when I first came here, I couldn't grow anything because my well water was killing stuff and the rodents were eating everything I tried to plant. And I started working on changing my mentality from like a lack mentality to an abundance mentality. I even started doing meditations where I would just sit and feel the rain, like believe that rain was coming, and it would freaking rain. And so the creek, I have a dry creek bed here. When I bought this property, they told me that it only ran, you know, they hadn't seen it ran in years and years and years. And then it ran, and then it ran again. And then last year it ran twice. And I have watched this place become more and more abundant. And I'm watching like the wildlife helping me. Like when I had the Fox family that moved in with the babies, they were taking care of all the rodents around here. And then with more rain coming, I could actually grow stuff because I didn't need my well water. And it was washing all the salts that, that made the soil so you can grow in it out. Right. So as I've been changing my state of mind and I'm getting in this more abundance and empowered place from internal power, not from the power of fighting against anything or trying to control anything or working hard. And that's the thing. People are like, oh, you work so hard because I've built so much here. And I'm like, that wasn't work. That was fun. I don't work when it feels like slavery, when it's not fun. Everything I do is because I'm passionate about it and it's fun. And when I create things that are beautiful, it's all creating this energy field in me, which I believe is real. All of nature is like an energy field. The animals respond to your energy field. Everything responds to your energy field. If you keep that energy field in a really positive place, it's just like everything just flows. You're in the flow. You're in the flow of positive energy. So that's what I have found. So I'm able to do an enormous amount of stuff here by myself. I was even rolling like 300-pound boulders, you know, hundreds of feet up my driveway. And it was fun because I wasn't going to do it if it hurt or if it felt bad. I was going to do it because I want to feel like, what am I capable of? This is fun just to challenge myself. And thinking I'm only going to move that boulder like 5 feet a day. And, you know, I could get a guy to come help me with a machine. But I was like, it's not really in line with my whole eco, you know, like I want to not depend on fossil fuels. I want to live off this land without depending on all that stuff. And so I started rolling this freaking boulder and I rolled it up the whole driveway. It was like, you know, 150 feet or something. I don't know, in an hour. Like a 300-pound boulder. And then I felt so proud. And so, yes, this is what I want to share with people, is that if you want to live wild, if you want to live in beautiful wilderness and not destroy it and not have a really hard life, tap into your superpowers, which is all in your mind, in your belief, in your focus. Because I'm just watching really cool things happen. I don't know if you saw my video about the bobcat. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay, so the more I'm in this mindset of believing that everything's working for me and not against me, you know, I'm just seeing it happen. And I planted a mesquite tree outside of my door. And recently, well, at first I was like, this tree's not doing so great. It looks like the soil is just too much clay. It needs more aeration. And then next thing you know, there's a freaking gopher making little holes under the tree and around the tree. And I noticed that. And I was like, I wonder if it's going to eat the tree. Like, will it kill the tree? I know it will kill fruit trees, but I didn't know if a mesquite, if it would do that. And then I'm sitting in my studio here one day and I look out and there's a bobcat walking right past my window and it's like on the prowl, and then it pounces on something and it pulls it up out of the ground, and then it walks up on my hill and it turns around and it stares at me for like 2 minutes, like for the longest time, and it's got a gopher in its mouth. Like, it came and saved my tree from the gopher, but the gopher saved my tree from the compacted soil. And these are the kind of things that are just happening all the time because I believe in it. And that's what I want to share with people, is that, and there's a whole school of thought, you know, law of attraction and stuff. And a lot of people think it's woo-woo and or just not tuned into it. But if it can make a single female who's over 50, living alone, without a car or job, in the wilderness, have an extraordinary life and easy life, something worth looking into.
No, I agree. And I think what stands out when I watch your stuff is truly just like how joyful you are. Because if someone, if you wrote on paper all of the projects that you've done, it would look like a lot of work. But when you talk about it, it doesn't seem like you're working. It seems more like play.
It's all play. Yeah. And you know, like I'm a super, super sensitive person. I love being feminine. I love wearing dresses and I love just, you know, easy, graceful things. But with this lifestyle, I also get the hard, I mean, it's not hard, but it's just physical workout. Like everything I've built with clay, I've dug with a pickaxe out of the hill. I've dug so many terraces and like I've done an insane amount of work. But it feels so good because the rest of the time I'm just laying around looking at the sky thinking, oh my God, this is so gorgeous. And looking at the trees, how gorgeous. And looking at the animals and like I have so much time because I do what I want and I'm not working for anyone. And so, yeah, all the things I do, it's like a pleasure. Like, and I've had to learn how to balance the work, I mean, the physical stuff with the rest. I feel like I love where I'm at in my life now because I've got a balance of my male and female energy. Like I love that like do it male energy, but I couldn't do all of that if I wasn't doing all the meditation and the stillness and the tuning into my feelings and feeling my body and releasing resistance and tension and just learning how to just be, you know? Like they both feed each other.
Totally.
So yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. It comes through with everything you're doing. So I think it's an incredibly inspiring story, and I think it's something that we need more of. We need a little bit more of people understanding that there are other ways to live. You know, if you love the modern world and all the things that come with it, that's great. But if you want to seek a different way of living, I love that there are resources out there. And I think a lot of people are going to get to listen to this and rethink about how much time they're spending doing things they hate. And that's really a powerful measure. And it's a powerful message to folks to just be intentional about how they're using their time. So,
And it's also, we're taught civilization, like since I've been here alone and had so much time to think, I've been deprogramming. Like I couldn't believe how much programming you have just about time and about your worth as a human. Like we're really taught that your worth comes from how much you produce. Like that's that, like civilization is a construct of man. It's something man-made that people all agreed to and they go along with it, like that you just got to suck it up and you just got to, you know, push through and do stuff you hate. And I would love to be an example of people for people of, well, here's another way and it works. You know, like I don't feel like and I've had to deprogram, so I didn't feel like I had to be productive all the time. But, you know, having time is just like absolute gold. Time to just dream, to daydream, to feel, to appreciate, you know, and to not have to live up to these standards of society and have things that society thinks you need to have and behave in ways society thinks you need to do. As I've been freeing myself from that, my life's getting easier and easier and easier and more fun. Like for instance, I built my little tiny house, and because of issues with water vapor, I can't shower inside anymore. So for the last over 4.5 years, I've been showering outside year round. So I basically am outside, you know, just on a rock. I heat up my water in the wintertime and I shower. And, you know, most people would think, well, that's terrible and that's sad. And I'm thinking, holy crap, I don't ever have to clean a shower again. You know, I don't need all the cleaning supplies. I don't have to do the work. I'm standing on a rock, you know, the sun sterilizes it, not that it needs to be cleaned. Are your showers adventures? Because my showers are adventures, you know, like, and it's making me stronger. It's making me more a part of nature, you know, just not needing all the things that society tells you you need to have a good life. So I don't have indoor plumbing or electricity in my house. And I absolutely love it. Like, it's just simple. I have less to clean because my house is small. I spend most of my time playing outside and creating, and it's just a completely different reality. And yeah, so like what you said, I would love to show people, well, this is a possibility. If you know, if you want to do it, it's possible. I'm an example of it, you know. And people who don't want to do it, cool.
Yeah,
but I do have an idea. What?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I have an idea for something I would love to create in the future. You know, I'm always dreaming up stuff, but I'm like, wouldn't it be cool? I live right off of the Pacific Crest Trail. I don't know if you probably know about that. It goes from Mexico to Canada. So I can hike to it. It's like 5 mile walk from my place to the Pacific Crest Trail. And all the land back there is just incredible wilderness. And I was dreaming up the ideas, the possibility of a future where, you know, I could, or someone could, or a group of people could establish nature preserves that include humans. So, you know, here, this nature preserve, you know, all the wild animals get to live, but the humans get to live wild too, you know. And, you know, if you could hike from one like community to the other on the Pacific Crest Trail and live this like much more nature centered life, just like thoughts and ideas about that, you know, because it, for me, the more I deprogram and the more I'm getting, like, I get my soap, my laundry soap, my shampoo, my dish soap, everything from the land, from plants. A lot of the stuff that I use on a daily basis, I get from the land. A lot of my food, I get from the land. The more I'm doing that, the more, like, and the more I'm letting go of my programming and learning to be present, I'm like in the state of ecstasy. Mm. Like, it's incredible. It's so incredible. And you know, because you spend time out in nature, and it's just phenomenal, and all the you know, the adventures you can have, and the connection, and just the beauty, you know. It's an incredible, phenomenal, absolutely thrilling life for me. And it does have challenges, but the challenges aren't that they're not that I need to push harder to be this rugged individual living off the land. The way I meet all of my challenges is I change my state of mind, or I just surrender and let go. And then everything just flows gracefully, and it's magic. It's pure magic. And I believe that's the life we were meant to live, for those who choose it. And it's 100% possible. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be a struggle. We just have to learn how to use our powers, really, you know, of focus, you know, so you're not focused in a negative way. You're not focused on fear. Learn how to use your mind. Learn how to tap into your connection to the divine. It, you know, from my experience, that's how I share that with people. But
well, thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing it with me and everyone else. It's a beautiful story, and I think there's so much more to unpack here, but it was a great, great conversation, and I look more to hearing more about your story and your farm moving forward.
Awesome. Thank you for letting me tell my story and share with you guys, and I appreciate the work you're doing with, you know, all the people that you talk to, and exposing the, you know, the potential, human potential, and connection to nature potential and all that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. I'm looking forward to episode 2, and thank you everyone for joining and tuning in with us. And until next time, stay wild.